Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on capital punishment when we come back. You know, when you're making $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Then, in addition to that, you pay a 17% income tax, that's the minimum, on that $50,000. Now, that's another $8,500. And when you've completed those two payments, you just paid an extra $1,300 by paying your tax on a tax. Now, that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not the 15.3% that's being advertised. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, the area code 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Call and ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. And it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, our tax and status school is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can just go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email, and then send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we have been talking about capital punishment. We covered two treatises by Alan Dershowitz, who wrote a book called Contrary to Popular Opinion, and Chapter 9 deals with his views on capital punishment. He wrote two very good briefs, very short briefs, but short briefs on the subject of capital punishment. And, you know, there's always two sides. There's one side that's seeking to expand capital punishment. I mean, let's hang the bastards. Then there's another side over here that they don't want capital punishment at all. They want to abolish capital punishment here in the United States. A number of states have, in fact, abolished capital punishment. Now, capital punishment comes from the Bible. I suppose it's been around in pagan nations, you know, like Babylon, Assyria, Egypt, and so on, even before Moses. But it certainly came to us with Moses at Mount Sinai. It's a part and parcel with the Old Covenant. The creator of the universe has put his stamp of approval on capital punishment and has set down a number of laws, statutes, judgments, and commandments as to how capital punishment is to be meted out. Who gets capital punishment and for what crimes? So last time I went through the 24 crimes that God himself, God Almighty, the creator, has included in. There's 24 subject matters, 24 acts or omissions that you can get involved in that could cost you your life under the Mosaic law. Primarily, in secular law, we only deal with murder. Once in a while with treason, sometimes you can get the death penalty for kidnapping. Not very often, but once in a while. But not for smiting of parents or for cursing of parents or abortion or daylight shooting of a thief or witchcraft, bestiality, or idolatry. Now, all of that, you know, we look at that and we just got to laugh and say, well, that's some religious fanaticism over there. That's got nothing to do with reality. So there's a third side that I wanted to bring to your attention here, and that's God himself. Because on the one hand, the advocates of abolishing capital punishment will tell you, but capital punishment doesn't work. And you know, they're right. It don't work. They take a look in those states where capital punishment is used and find that in the states where there is capital punishment, like Texas, they have more homicides per 100,000 than states that don't have capital punishment, like New York. And they say, see, it doesn't work. Well, that's because capital punishment has never been used. Let me repeat that. Capital punishment has never been used, not in the history of the United States. It's true, we kill a lot of people, but we're not using capital punishment. If we use capital punishment the way it's laid out in the Bible, you'd have the same rate of recidivism or crime as you have in Saudi Arabia, which is near zero. Yeah, listen to that one again. Saudi Arabia uses the death penalty, and they use capital punishment. They don't have very much crime in Saudi Arabia. Here in America, we use what we call capital punishment. And we have a tremendous amount of homicide. In fact, I think we lead the world. If we don't, we're right up there in the top 10. So when the advocates of abolishing capital punishment come to you and say it doesn't work, they're not whistling Dixie, thrust, draw, hat. On the other hand, the other guys on the other side, they're saying, what we need is more of it. Well, they're right, too. We need more of it. We need to include all 24 of these categories of crime, under the label of capital punishment, and then we need to actually practice capital punishment, because what we're practicing here today is the killing of wrongdoers in secret, in a dark hidey hole in a prison where just a handful of witnesses can observe it and report on. Boys and girls, that's not capital punishment. That's retribution. It's a killing the wrongdoer. But capital punishment has to do with a deterrence factor. Now, let me describe for you how capital punishment is actually used in the Muslim country of Saudi Arabia. I had a student over there, and he reported two punishments, one of them capital, the other one wasn't quite capital, but it was pretty gruesome. And he said it was something that he will remember for the rest of his life. Now, I cannot remember all the capital punishment cases that I've heard of in the United States. I can remember Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, about 1950, 51, 52, long in there. They were executed in New York. And let's see, can I remember any other execution? You know, off the top of my head, I can't. Oh, Ted Bundy. I did this one last night. Ted Bundy, I can remember Ted Bundy. And you know, if I sat here and thought for 10 or 15 minutes, I might be able to remember a couple of more. And that's the problem with capital punishment in the United States. You cannot remember these people. You don't know what they did. You don't know who they are. At the time that you saw it in the paper, you could remember it for 3 days and then you forgot it. It isn't something that you remember. Like, I can remember thou shalt not steal. And I remember the first time that I got caught stealing. And I remember the punishment that went with it. I will never forget that as long as I live. I lived through that. And my parents taught me about theft. And they taught me that there's a Ten Commandments. And there's one of them that says, thou shalt not steal. And this is a terrible crime that you've committed. And I went through this three-day punishment over theft. And I think I was 8 years old, seven or eight, long in there, third grade. Now, I never did kill anybody, but I can remember being taught about murder. About death. I'd been to a couple of funerals and I saw dead people and I saw them buried in the ground. And then I was told, it was explained to me, I was about, you know, maybe 8, 7, 8, 9 years old. By the time I was 10, I could fully understand the consequences of murder. As old as I am, I can still remember. By fourth grade, age 10, I could remember the consequences. I knew that murder was wrong. So you could have, you know, at age 10 or 11 or 12 with me, you could have easily taken me out and stoned me to death for killing somebody because I knew and understood that it was wrong. And after all, that's what culpability is all about. That's what the Tenth Commandment is all about. So in Saudi Arabia, those are Muslim people over there. And believe it or not, the Muslim people follow an awful lot of the Hebrew scriptures. See, they don't eat unclean meat. Well, not entirely. They eat camel, a lot of them, and camel's unclean. But they don't eat pork, and they don't eat shellfish, and you know, pretty much. And they're pretty clean living people. And they're very moral. And they don't steal. Muslims don't steal. And in Saudi Arabia, at least those Muslims don't steal. And this guy who was over there, he told me about a case where a guy went in and stole. He said, ordinarily, you could go into a bazaar, and the proprietor of a booth might be gone. And here's all of his merchandise out there, and there's all these people walking by, and nobody is stealing his stuff. In Japan, the people don't steal. They tested this one time. They put a coin in a telephone. Now, most people in America, they open the telephone return box to see if there's any coins in it that somebody forgot to pick up. In Japan, they put them in there to see if anybody will take them out. And oftentimes, a coin will stay in there for a week. Nobody will take it. And that's because they all recognize that it's not my coin. I don't know whose coin that is in there, but I know it's not mine, so they leave it there. They have a different take on theft than we do here in America today. Now, there was a time in America when I was a child when people didn't steal. Nobody was concerned about theft or thievery. It was that rare. Not non-existent, but it was so rare that it wasn't anything to be concerned about. Today, everybody steals. Nearly everybody steals. And in Saudi Arabia, they cut your hand off if they catch you stealing. And so that's why it's pretty rare. Now, this guy had stolen, and they had a big to-do about this, and they brought this guy out, and they had a big, there was cotton candy, he said, being sold. There was confections. There was probably 15, 16, 1,800 people present. And they brought an ambulance in. They had paramedics there. They took this guy, tied his hand onto a big block of wood. Looked like a big tree stump. And they had locks on this top of this tree stump, tied his hand on. And they took a scimitar, you know, these famous Arabian scimitars. And they had an executioner there, and he came down with that scimitar, boom, chomp, and chopped his hand right off. The guy screamed bloody murder. I imagine it must hurt like hell. And he was screaming. He passed out. He lost a little blood. They took his arm loose, and then the paramedics, you know, loaded him up in the ambulance, hauled him off to the hospital, and probably took care of him. And he said it was so gruesome what he saw. He said almost made him puke. It didn't quite, but almost. And this guy's, you know, a big burly oil worker working for Aramco. And he said, now there's an example of an execution. And it just remained with him, he said, and it will remain with him for the rest of his life. Now, that's true. That's very gruesome. Here in America, if I suggested that we cut a thief's hand off, you know, you'd sit there and say, oh, my God, I cannot believe that a civilized people would do this. Now, believe it or not, the creator of the universe prescribes the cutting off of your hand in Deuteronomy 25, verse 12. Probably most of you Christians have never heard this because you don't read the Old Testament. But in Deuteronomy 25, verse 12, there is a particular crime that when you commit this crime, it's not theft. The punishment for theft under the Mosaic law is not cutting your hand off. They do that in Saudi Arabia. And in this case, they don't follow the Mosaic code. But the law of Moses requires the cutting off of your hand. Let me read it to you. It says, when men strive together, and one with another, and the wife of the one draws near to deliver her husband out of the hand of him that smiteth him, and she puts forth her hand, and takes him by the secrets, that's the old King James for testicles, then you shall cut off her hand, and your eye shall not pity her. Woo. Boy, that's an anomaly. That's kind of what we call an anomaly in law, because ordinarily, when you harm somebody, we use the principle of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, wound for wound, stripe for stripe, and life for life, ordinarily. In this particular case, the reproductive organ of a man, testicles in this case, if a woman reaches and takes a man by his testicles, and it could be anybody, I mean, it could be you or Joe Sixpack or anybody else who does that particular act or crime, the punishment for that is to cut off your hand. Isn't that just special? Now, if you say, well, that's barbaric, well, then this God is a barbarian. I guess that's the only conclusion you could come to. If you say that's uncivilized, well, then you'd have to say that this God is an uncivilized barbarian. I know that's what Andy Rooney thinks. So he was on 60 Minutes one night, and he went through the Ten Commandments, and he discarded about half of them. He said, that's nonsense, and this one over here makes some sense, but this one over here is stupid. And he went through the Ten Commandments, and he didn't think much of them. And I could just imagine what Andy Rooney would say concerning this law here. I'm just a reporter, so I just wanted to report that law to you. In fact, there's 28 different punishments here, 24 capital crimes. But there are 28 ways that God has devised to punish people. So let me run through those 28 just for funnies over here. Funnies. Number one, you could be burned at the stake. Remember, that was just for two crimes. One was incest with a mother and her daughter. Or it could be a marriage. It could be sexual relations with a mother and her daughter. And the other was the daughter of a priest who commits fornication or whoredom. You can be stoned to death. You can be hanged. Now, that hanging isn't the same kind of hanging that we see in a John Wayne movie. And after they have executed you, they hang you up on a tree. You could be scourged. You could be whipped. You know, 39 stripes is what it calls for in the scripture. You get 40 stripes, but then you got to withhold one just to make sure that you don't go over 40. You could be excommunicated. And we do that. Churches excommunicate people today that don't adhere to their doctrine. You could have your hand cut off. That was number six. Number seven, you could die childless. That's Leviticus 20, verse 21. So when you see people that are infertile and they die childless, there's a crime being committed there. That's why they're infertile. Number eight, same as you did to him, that's where you commit perjury. And whatever it was that you thought to do to that guy is the punishment that you get. That's Deuteronomy 19, verses 16 through 21. You could be forced into marriage. This is where the famous shotgun marriage comes in. Fornication, Deuteronomy 22, verse 24. National captivity, that's Sabbath breaking. That's Leviticus 26, verse 34. You can go into captivity for that. Chapter or number 11, loss of blessings. There are certain benefits that you receive by practicing the Ten Commandments, and those can be withheld or taken away from you. That's Leviticus 26, verses 14 through 16. You can be fined. Could be a monetary penalty. That's Deuteronomy 22, verse 13 through 21. You could be compelled to pay back restitution. You know, you get caught stealing something, you have to pay it back. That's Exodus 22, 14. Sore sickness, you could come down with cancer. That's Deuteronomy 28, 59 through 61. You could come down with a disease. That's Deuteronomy 28, 60. And you could even be hit by bubonic plague. That's Deuteronomy 28, 61. You could be stricken or struck with a swelled belly. That's Numbers 5, verses 11 through 31. And then you could pay an eye for an eye, Exodus 21, 24. You could pay a tooth for a tooth. That's Exodus 21, 24. Or a hand for hand. That's Exodus 21, 24. Or you could pay life for life, Exodus 21, 22. Foot for foot, Exodus 21, 24. Or burning for burning, Exodus 21:25. Wound for wound, Exodus 21:25. Or stripe for stripe, Exodus 21:25. You could lose your slaves. You might have to turn them loose or lose them. That's Exodus 21, verses 26 and 27. You could be exiled to a city of refuge in Exodus 21:13. Or number 28, the final solution, as Adolf Hitler used to call it, the final solution is called the lake of fire. And that's in Revelation 20, verses 13 through 15. So the creator of the universe has come up with 28 punishments or penalties that may be applied to you. Notice here that not all of them are capital. You don't go and hang somebody or kill them for a traffic violation, typically. And God doesn't do that either. So if you got a minor crime, you have a penalty, but it's not a life. But in some other cases over here, you can have a capital felony, like Sabbath breaking is a capital felony. Yeah, just failing to report for church and to stop working on Saturday could get you killed. All right, now, that's the third side that I wanted to tell you about. And looking at it from side number one, Alan Dershowitz writes an article here, a short article, on seeking a hangman, experience preferred. Now listen to this story. This comes out of Washington State. He said, the state of Washington has finally managed to fill a grisly job that had been vacant since 1965. Can you imagine that? 65, 75, 85. Now, he wrote this book in 1992. That job is the official hangman of Washington State. No American has been hanged since Richard Hickok and Perry Smith, the central figures in the Truman Capote book called In Cold Blood, were sent to the gallows back in 1965. Only four states still provide for hanging as a means of execution. Three of them, Montana, Delaware, and New Hampshire, have not executed anyone for more than 40 years, and no hangings are imminent there. But Washington State, which currently has seven death row inmates, gives each condemned person the right to choose lethal injection. But condemned killer Charles Campbell has refused to exercise that right, and under Washington law, therefore, he must be hanged by the neck until he is dead. And the person who hangs Campbell must be, under the law, a qualified hangman. But since hanging has all but disappeared from the civilized world, it is difficult for would-be practitioners of this trade to gain the necessary experience to become a qualified hangman. Now, after a long and difficult search, the Washington Department of Corrections claims to have found a qualified hangman who was willing to put the noose around Campbell's neck for $1,500. I have no idea how many aspiring hangmen applied for this profitable post, nor do I know what kind of employment agencies, headhunters, handle hangman's applications. And I can hardly imagine what the resumes and letters of recommendations would look like. Now, the American Civil Liberties Union, ever vigilant to protect the quality of death as well as the quality of life, has some doubts about this new employee. Since Washington refuses to disclose the identity of its hanged person, the hanged person designate, we should not assume that the anonymous executioner is male, though I bet he is. The ACLU is protesting that it cannot check up on his qualifications for the job, and they're demanding access to public records in order to determine whether the hangman meets the criteria for being qualified under the law. Now, this, of course, raises the obvious question. What makes someone qualified to serve as an official hangman? Obviously, there are minimal technical skills necessary to assure that he doesn't botch the job, as was done with Captain Kidd's hanging back in 1701. The definitive history of English criminal law recounts how the rope broke and Kidd had to be raised from the ground and then hanged a second time. Such accidents were of frequent occurrence in the old days, and even when Englishmen were strung up with regularity by experienced hangmen, execution accidents have occurred in this country as well, even after the modern electric chair replaced the primitive gallows as the primary means of inflicting capital punishment. In 1946, a 17-year-old black youth, he was 15 at the time of the crime, had an insufficient shock of electricity sent through his body by a defective electric chair, and he was re-executed a year later after an unsuccessful claim before the Supreme Court. The second try would place him twice in jeopardy of his life. In 1953, Ethel Rosenberg had to receive a second jolt of electricity after the first rendered her unconscious but not dead. Thus, a qualified hangman must know how to kill efficiently and with a minimum of suffering to the hangee. Efficient hangmen will be harder to find now than they were when hanging was prevalent and practice made perfect. There are no experienced executioners in Western Europe because capital punishment has not been practiced there for more than a generation. American executioners now specialize in the lethal injection mode, which is quickly becoming the capital punishment of choice in many states. But despite the fact that we have had no hangings in this country for a quarter of a century, the Washington authorities assure us that the winning applicant for the job of Washington State hangman comes from the United States. This means that the hangman must either be a real old-timer, or he's a novice, or he's an amateur who may have learned his craft by participating in extra-legal lynchings. Charles Campbell's last sigh will certainly be one of relief, secure in the knowledge that the hand placing the noose around his neck is that of a civilized American and not a barbaric foreigner. I wonder how an executioner feels after he has completed his job. In the case of Charles Campbell, it may be difficult to shed too many tears. He was convicted of murdering a woman who had testified against him after he assaulted her. If there are any appropriate candidates for capital punishment, and that question has divided civilized people for centuries, Campbell would seem to be one of them. But what about Randall Adams, who was just minutes away from execution when the courts spared and eventually freed him because they determined that he was innocent after another man confessed to the murder? Or what about W. Thomas Ziegler, who was the subject of a recent public television debate, after which nearly two-thirds of the viewers who called in believed that he was not guilty? Or the dozens of other death row inmates who may well be innocent? The anonymous hangman hired by the state of Washington may be qualified to assure that Charles Campbell is efficiently hanged by the neck until he is dead. But what really qualifies a human being to take another human being's life? Now, remember, this is an essay by Alan Dershowitz. That is a very good argument. I like it. Tremendous argument. It has just the right amount of humor, doesn't it? But I think it begs the question, if we're not going to hang the man, then how else should we execute him? Should we electrocute him? Should we gas him? Should we give him lethal injection? Should we burn him at the stake? What is the proper modality for executing this man, and how and where should it be accomplished? Now, when I began this essay here tonight, I said we have not practiced capital punishment in this country in our history. We have been killing people, and more than likely, they're going to kill this guy Campbell in private, in a secret execution in the Washington Penitentiary with a handful of spectators, a handful of eyewitnesses. But that's not an execution. That's a killing, but it's not an execution. Now, an execution has two elements to it. Number one, we're going to execute, we're going to kill this guy, we're going to take his life. And number two, the purpose for this is so that all of us will hear and fear to do anything like this man has done. Well, at least that's what the creator of the universe had in mind when he instituted this process of capital punishment. And he uses that term over and over and over in Scripture, that you may hear and that you may fear. Now, I said they actually practiced this in Saudi Arabia, and I'm going to tell you a story about a princess over there that was caught committing adultery. Well, it was either that or fornication, I forget now which it was, in 1978. And this same man that I described to you earlier in tonight's program, I said, who had visited and who had viewed and had actually experienced a man being executed and having his hand cut off, was also present when they executed the princess by stoning her to death. We'll be back with that description right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact discs. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about capital punishment, and we are reviewing Chapter 9 of Alan Dershowitz's book, and that's spelled Dershowitz, his book Contrary to Popular Opinion, published in 1992. It was a New York Times number one bestseller. Well, I don't know if this book was or not. New York Times number one bestselling author of Chutzpah. And so he wrote a book called Chutzpah, and that was number one New York Times bestseller. I don't know if this one was or not. If it wasn't, it should have been. It's a really interesting book. He probably has 200, maybe 300 of these short stories on his views, in which I don't agree with. He's a flaming liberal, college professor from Harvard. He's a Harvard law school professor, a flaming liberal. But you got to admit that many of his arguments have real reason, logic, and common sense behind them. And the reason that I disagree with some of his conclusions here is because the God of the Scripture, you know, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, disagrees with him. And I'm just of the opinion that the God of Abraham, just a little smarter than Mr. Dershowitz, you know, no disrespect intended. Been around a little longer, knows a little more. And he came up with this idea of capital punishment, but he came up with the idea of capital punishment so that we would learn a lesson and hear in fear. And so the way it's to be carried out is in public, which is the way they do it over in Saudi Arabia. You see, first of all, this guy has to be condemned by the congregation, and he has to be executed by the same congregation. And that's where our concepts and that's where our principles of jury trials come from over here. We have grand juries and we have petite juries. And in the scripture, God calls that going to the congregation. The congregation makes this decision and the congregation carries out the execution. And that means men, women, and children. Everybody goes to the execution, just like everybody goes to church, just like everybody keeps the Sabbath. And like as not, these executions would be carried out on the Sabbath when everybody is already gathered together at the synagogue. Now, I don't know if they did this in Old Testament times, but in Saudi Arabia, they took the princess and they buried her in the sand up to her neck. Only her head was showing above the ground. And then everybody lined up, and when they gave the go-ahead, they start throwing rocks at her, and it was over in just seconds. He said the first rocks, of course, missed. You know, about 90% of the rocks that are being thrown at the target miss. Some of them are short and bounce off of the ground and then hit the victim, you know, on the rebound. And there's this dull thud. He said the sound of a rock hitting this woman's head, he said, was a sound that he will live with for the rest of his life. He said, there's no sound like it. As he was describing this to me. And I will never forget the description of the man with his hand cut off or the princess who was being stoned, because he told the story here in the classroom. We had, you know, 6-8 students here in the class, and it was gruesome, the description of it. And it's kind of gruesome as you're listening to me describe it. And I don't deny that. It is designed. Executions are designed to be gruesome for the express purpose of impressing upon you an event that you will never forget if you live to be 110. It'll live with you forever, so that you will hear and fear. But you see, executions in the United States, or what we call executions, are done in private. I can't even remember the people that have been executed. I mean, hundreds of people are executed in America every year. And, you know, with rare exception, like a Ted Bundy or a Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, which is the only three that I can remember in my lifetime. Now, I'm pushing 70. I can only remember three off the top of my head. Now, surely there's been, you know, many more that have come across my mind, but they don't register. So it isn't any wonder that capital punishment in the United States doesn't work. And that's because nobody's ever seen one. We don't know what the hell it is. We've never experienced that. But this oil worker said, once you've seen one, he said, you'll never forget it. It'll never leave you. Soldiers go through that. It's called post-combat syndrome. They used to call it shell shock, you know, but post-traumatic stress syndrome, I believe they call it now. If you see too many people getting killed too often, too bloody, you know, it's going to register on you, and you're going to remember that. And Mr. Dershowitz points out here that in the next one, he's talking about television. He says it should be televised, and then it should be done so that children can't see it. Oh, no, Mr. Dershowitz. Oh, no. It should be done on the Sabbath day at synagogue in front of all the children so that the children never forget it. Because remember, under the law of this God, this uncivilized, barbaric God who instituted capital punishment and instituted this process, also declares that children should be executed when they don't mind their parents, or when they talk back to their parents, or when they smite their parents. They should be executed. That's children. How old should these children be? Well, they should be of an age that they know and understand that they have to obey their parents, and if they don't, then they will be executed. And I pointed that out in the first one here. You know, the first story here was, did God make provisions for people that are retarded? And the answer is yes. Murder is an intent crime. You have to show that there's intent here. You've got to come to the conclusion. The congregation, the jury, has to come to the conclusion that this guy knew and understood what he was doing. If he doesn't know it and doesn't understand it, he's not of an age. There was a six-year-old boy that took a gun out of his daddy's dresser and shot a little playmate with it, 6 years old. That child didn't understand what he was doing. I'd have a hard time believing that a six-year-old kid could understand death or understand murder. But I mentioned that by the time I was 10, I could. And you could have taken me out and stoned me. Now, I'm not here to defend this God. He can defend himself. In fact, he said, now, if you don't like this, if you've got a problem with my law, if you've got a problem with my program, why don't you just come to me directly, give me the finger, and tell me about it? It's over here in Deuteronomy 7. I'll read it for you again. I've done it 2-3 times. He said, know therefore that the Eternal, your God, is a God. He is God, the faithful God, which keeps covenant, that's contract, keeps contract and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. Remember that love now is keeping the commandments. For this is the love of God that we keep his commandments. For this is the love of God that we carry out executions the way he told us to. That's showing love to God. Then in verse 10 he says, and repays them that hate him to their face to destroy them. And he will not be slack to him that hates him, and he'll repay him to his face. This guy's not bashful. He said he thinks he can stare you down, look you right in the eyeball, and pay you just exactly what he thinks you're worth right to your face, which is why I've set a time or two over here that perhaps we ought to be a little more cautious about how we deal with this guy. Now, here in America, we gas them, electrocute them, we inject them, we hang them. And in this story here, I want to review this. Death row inmate deserves lawyers, excuse me, wrong page here. Seeking a hangman, experience preferred. They're seeking a hangman over here. There's actually a statute over here that deals with hanging here in the Bible, and it's in Deuteronomy 21, verses 22 and 23. So first of all, let's take a look at hanging here in the Bible, because I suspect that this is why we use this mode of execution here in the United States, but they're off point. It is true that you hang the body up on a tree and it has to be cut down at the end of the day, but the guy did not die from strangulation, and he did not die from a broken neck. And that's because there can be no forgiveness of sin without the shedding of blood. And God insists that the sinner shed his blood. In fact, for the crime of murder, he tells you very plainly that the man who sheds blood, his blood shall be shed. And the execution styles that we're using, this is why I'm telling you, these aren't executions. They're killings, but they're not executions, because they're not being carried out the way we're instructed. And if you carry out your execution the way these are to be carried out, you're not going to have very much crime. You don't have very much capital crime over in Saudi Arabia. The people over there know what's going to happen to them. They've seen. They've heard. They know. Now, I imagine there's a few killings going on. I imagine there's a few rapes. I imagine that there's a few murders. And when you get caught, they take you out and stone you to death, and it's a public execution, and everybody in the community gets to see it done, and they'll never forget it, and they'll hear in fear. Now, I know somebody's going to write me a letter, and they're going to say, well, that's just your opinion. Hey, listen. I'm a reporter. I'm reporting the opinion of the creator of the universe that says, yeah, you do it this way and people will hear in fear. And that's the way, and that's why we do it this way. And I would suggest that if you wanted to eliminate crime, you know, you got these guys that are running around here, pedophiles that kidnap little girls and take them out, rape them, torture them to death. They don't just kill them. They torture them in the process and then kill them. And then we're concerned about having this guy's identification in the community. And so they get a big, big kick out of saying, well, we want to know that this guy moved into our community, and we want to know what his address is. Oh, my God. Have we taken leave of our senses? The God of Moses says you take him out and you stone that sucker to death. What do you mean you want to know what his address is? His address ought to be in Boot Hill, under a gravestone. That's where pedophiles belong. You don't belong out in your community, three doors down. Oh, watch out for that man that lives down at 2204. He's a pedophile. No wonder you can't get crime under control in America. It's because, you know, you've got these paid professionals. They go to college and they come out and they got a degree and they call themselves criminologists. Okay. Well, if you're so damn smart, Mr. Criminologist, why don't you prevent crime? I want you to take over the criminal justice system, all of you criminologists, all you PhDs, and solve our crime problem and do a better job than God. Do a better job, or at least as good as the Saudis do. And what you hear from these clowns is excuses. Well, you see, it's poverty. My God, there's poor people all over the world that don't steal, don't kill, don't rape, don't murder, and aren't sodomites. How come those people aren't out raping, robbing, and pillaging? They're just as poor. In fact, here in America, there isn't any poverty. The average man in the world, boys and girls, lives on $2 a day. I've never heard of a woman pushing a basket living under a bridge living on $2 a day, not in America. You know, what we call poverty over in this country is great wealth. Why do you think all the Mexicans are coming up here to the United States and risking their lives crossing the deserts? Because they're working for $5 a day in Mexico, which is big money worldwide. The average guy in Bangladesh makes $1 a day. 3 billion people in the world, boys and girls, 3 billion people in the world. Half of the world's population live on $2 a day or less. Now, we don't know what the answer to crime is because we don't know how to impose the punishments, of which I pointed out there's 28. So God came down the list over here and said, let me give you 28 ways to punish people, and let me give you 24 crimes over here that need killing. These people need killing. Now kill them. And here's the way to do it. So he gave us a modality. He said, I want them stoned to death. I want them stoned to death in public so that everybody can see it. Everybody can participate in it so they'll hear in fear. I don't want it hidden away in a prison someplace with just a handful of witnesses over here. I want this thing put right out there where everybody can see it. Now, he's also got a little story over here about an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, wound for wound, stripe for stripe, and life for life. This guy's got a great sense of humor. I looked at that and I said, you tell me that this guy isn't funny. There was a case not too long ago, really a gruesome case. There was a sodomite down in Texas. In fact, I think this guy was a black sodomite. And two white guys down there tied this guy to the back of their pickup and drug him to death. Drug this guy to death. And I just could not imagine doing that. You know, I'm a farmer, and I kill animals all the time. I mean, I'm a butcher, and I kill sheep, and I kill cows and steers and bulls all the time. And I just could not imagine torturing an animal. If I saw an animal out here with a broken leg, I'd go in the house and get a gun and come out and put him out of his misery. I'd shoot him. When I kill an animal, I kill him as fast and as rapidly as possible. I do it as painlessly as possible. And there's modalities for doing it. Now, when somebody dies from ALS, when somebody dies from cancer, that is a long, drawn-out punishment. I'm telling you, kids, that's not fun. I'd rather somebody took me out and killed me in about 5 minutes, you know, just strangled me to death or you know, get it over with, would you? Put me out of my misery. And here in the scripture, almost emphatically, or I say emphatically, you know, almost, not quite, but almost, in every single case, God requires that you do this rapidly. And hanging, without the shedding of blood, is not one of those modalities. Now, here in Deuteronomy 21, I believe it is. Let me see if I can look that up here. Hanging. I'm looking here. And it's in, you'd think I'd be able to find it right here. I'm going to flip over here to Deuteronomy chapter 21. Well, I must have it under some other. Here's murder, smiting of parents, kidnapping, cursing of parents, abortion, negligent, property liability, daylight shooting of a thief, witchcraft, bestiality, idolatry, profaning the Sabbath, adultery, incest, sodomy, blasphemy, false prophecy, perjury, rape, reviling priests, incorrigible delinquency. Let me look at murder here, because I think it's up here in Deuteronomy 21. I think that's what I told you, wasn't it? Let me flip over here and see if that's where it's at. Verse 18. If a man has a stubborn, rebellious son, nope, that ain't it. Well, anyway, over in Joshua, I had to write this down on one of my papers over here where it talks about hanging. And I had to add it in here. It was in Joshua chapter 8 concerning hanging. And the hanging occurred after the killing. It didn't occur as the modality for the killing. It occurred after the execution. So it's in Joshua 8 and it's in Joshua 10. Look that up. And so when they hung this guy, they hung him on a tree. But when they hung him on the tree, he was already dead, past tense. So tuck that one away in your heart. The modality for execution has to be done by stoning. Now, there's two statutes that come into play here, Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and Deuteronomy 12, verse 32, that tell you that you're not to add to this law and you're not to take away from this law. So don't get cute and come up with a better modality for killing somebody or for executing them. That's what we're doing. God made a mistake when he came up with this barbaric, uncivilized stoning process, which all the Saudis are. All the Saudis must be barbaric, uncivilized people over there because they use stoning, which, by the way, is what we got from Moses and got it right from the Messiah. Now somebody's going to write me a letter, so before you write me the letter, let me point out to you that Jesus authorized that himself in Matthew 4, verse 4, when he said, "Man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God." And he said that twice. He said it in Matthew 4, verse 4, and Luke 4, 4. Now, there are 759 statutes in the Scripture. 759 statutes, and are organized into 133 subject matters. In modern parlance, they're called titles. So the U.S. Code is organized into 50 titles, or 50 subject matters of law. For instance, if you're looking for criminal law, we go to Title 18. If you're looking for tax law, we go to Title 26. If you're looking for health and welfare, we go to Title 42, and so on. The Bible is organized the same way. And it is written in code. And in Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 28, verses 9 through 13, the code is revealed. And it's written in code, here a little, there a little. It's written line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. So what we do is we code plead this thing out. So what I did was I went through the scriptures and I looked up such things as murder. And so every place that I found murder or killing or something on that order, and I wrote that down. Pretty soon I came up with a number of these statutes. And then I organized those statutes so that I could recite them back. You know, we come up with murder, it's chapter 83 in the Mosaic Law. And then you go through here, and it's in Exodus 20:13, Exodus 21:12 through 14, and Leviticus 24, verse 17, Numbers 35, verses 1 through 34, Deuteronomy 5:17, Deuteronomy 19, verses 11 through 13, Deuteronomy 21, verses 1 through 9. And Deuteronomy 27, verses 24 and 25. Now, there's all of your murder statutes. Now, I mentioned that there was a guy here, this black guy, that was taken out, and he was dragged to death behind the back of a pickup. What should be the modality for the death of the two guys that played vigilantes and killed this guy? Can you figure that out? Should we take him out and stone him? No? See, that's a crime that is so unusual that we apply a different standard. And that standard comes from the eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. So over here in Exodus chapter 21, I believe it is. Let's see if I can flip over to that one. See if I can find it here. In Exodus 21, he talks about this thing of an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, wound for wound, and stripe for stripe. Verse 21, 24, 23. It's a law of negligence here in verse 22. Yeah, here it is. He says, "If any mischief follow, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe." If you get some clown that comes up with some novel way to torture somebody or kill somebody, then you ought to apply that same punishment to him. So we'd have this big public spectacle. You know, we'd all go to synagogue on Saturday. And we'd take a pickup, and we'd tie these two guys on each side of the bumper and start driving the pickup around the square, around the Gainesville Square. And we'd just keep driving it and driving it until pretty soon these guys got so tired that they'd just fall down on the ground. And then we'd start dragging them. And pretty soon their clothes would peel off on the pavement. Pretty soon then their bodies would peel off. You think we'd remember that? Do you think anybody else, after having seen that done in public, would want to kill somebody in that fashion? Because that's what they did to that black guy. That's what they did. So God comes along and he says, okay. You want to go out here and gouge somebody's eye out, and then we'll gouge your eye out. You want to go out here and drag somebody to death, and that's what we're going to do to you. Now, we're not going to do this in secret inside of the prison compound over here where the rank and file, everyday Joe Sixpack citizen can't see it and doesn't know what's going on. We're going to make sure that Joe Sixpack gets a good opportunity to see so that he can hear and so he can fear. That's the purpose behind execution. That's the purpose behind capital punishment. So when Alan Dershowitz says capital punishment doesn't work, he's not whistling Dixie. He's telling you plainly, it doesn't work. I agree with you, Mr. Dershowitz, it doesn't work. And that's because you've never carried it out the way we were instructed to carry it out. And as long as you carry out these executions in secret, in a prison where nobody can see it, nobody can hear it, nobody can see it, nobody can feel it. So we can't hear and fear. I can't even remember who it was that was killed, much less make an impression upon me to make me stop and think, oh my God, I remember what happened to this guy when he did this. I don't think I want to do that. Now, for most of us, you know, we can be told. I was told. I had to be taught how not to steal. But I was explained to. I was told how not to kill. I never have killed anybody. It worked for me. And I would submit to you that, you know, instead of worrying about hiring the hangman for Washington State, just make sure that the guy is guilty. And then let's take him out and stone him to death like we were told in public. And we won't be worried about hiring another hangman, will we? Hey, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling site or the page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.